This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry for more than 12 years, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and into what stuff means, and help listeners understand why they should maybe give a crap. You can listen to episodes online, get them off iTunes or Google Play, or subscribe using a podcast app. Whatever way you choose, they're free and there's a new one weekly. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported from the start by Jeremy Gabin and his great team at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at screenfeed.com. Anyone who works with creative teams knows there's no such thing as the content fairy. Video spots don't magically appear in inboxes overnight. Somebody had to design and render that video, and that frankly takes a while. So it's a little freaky to talk to a company that can do thousands of good-looking, customized videos in a matter of hours. But that's what DataClay is all about. The little company operating out of Austin, Texas, has written the software and services that can mass-produce data-driven videos at pretty much the click of a mouse. And these aren't crappy, simplistic videos no one would want anyway. They come out of Adobe After Effects with full After Effects templates and a plugin written by DataClay. Imagine a national retailer being able to mass-produce a piece of video for every listing that comes into his databases. Photos, details, the whole nine yards. Imagine a theme park spitting out videos instead of 8x10s that families can buy when they leave a ride or the park, showing their highlights of the trip. I spoke with company founder Ari Shavchansky about how his platform brings automation and industrial-scale video production to digital signage, advertising, and marketing. Ari, can you tell me what DataClay is all about?
Sure. DataClay is all about empowering video producers to create personalized video messaging very quickly and efficiently. And it's also about getting content to be more relatable for audiences. So there's a dual-pronged approach that we approach our business. One is the creator, one is the consumer, mm-hmm. and we care deeply about both.
And as I understand it, when, you know, we chatted when I was down in Austin and you were there at a Digital Signage Federation function. Yes. And you said, in effect, this is a platform that works with Adobe After Effects and automates the production of video-based content. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, absolutely. Our primary product is hosted by the After Effects application. And
So what's happening? Somebody produces a template in After Effects or something like that and marries it to data tables. And you can, in effect, machine produce any number of videos very rapidly?
Yeah, it's an iterative algorithm. And, you know, our software bridges creates a bridge between data and the creative assets that are built in the video composite in After Effects. And, you know, once all of the wires are hooked up, you can execute a large batch reversioning process to get many videos, each with unique data baked into the render.
Okay. So for mere mortals like me, yes. other people listening to this, what that would in effect mean is, let's say, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, let's say you've got a batch of MLS listings, realtor listings for Albuquerque, New Mexico, and you want to create a particular realtor has a data flag for their location, their office, and so on. They could work with you, and based on a template, if there are 300 new listings that come out on a Friday, this could run through your engine, through one of your software partners, and crank out those 300 videos with all the individual photos and data attributes that they want to show for that particular listing on the fly, as opposed to some poor bastard having to generate 300 videos.
Oh yeah. That poor bastard is exactly who we're trying to save. The idea of creating that many videos in such a short amount of time is just wasn't possible before our tool. Mm-hmm. So yes, the answer is, you know, simultaneously the realtor gets these, you know, specific versioned videos based off of a master template, but then the person who's creating those videos has a much easier life. Yeah. They have a better likelihood as a result. So it's a win-win situation on both ends. So yeah, in effect, that's what you get. Sometimes I go back to the idea of the classic mail merge in Microsoft Word,
right?
You know, where you have a mailing list, you have some labels that are a template, and this mail merge function merges the data with the label template to get many labels. So that's exactly what we do, but you know, we are in the realm of digital video, and obviously time is important. So it's not just spatial, you know, layout, how things look, but it's also how things are arranged in time.
Right. And one of the things that I was talking about when we were chatting was I had seen and read about something that happened after this year's Boston Marathon and how Adidas worked with an agency and they produced, it was at least a couple thousand, the 4,000 sticks in my head.
I think Adweek recently did a profile on that campaign by, I think it's Grow. And it was somewhere along the lines of 30,000.
30,000.
Videos. Yeah.
And they did that in 24 hours, right? Or roughly 24 hours.
Yeah, I think I can't recall the exact time frame, but it was certainly a tight turnaround.
And it was an individualized video for everyone who ran the race with their interval times, a little mm-hmm. clip of them and the whole nine yards. And mm-hmm. that, as far as you know and can surmise, was done using your engine.
Well, I mean, you know, to be honest, I can't claim that, I don't know the inner workings of the workflow at Grow, right. Yeah. Which is the agency. I don't think I can necessarily claim, since, you know, we don't have a, you know, since we sell software licenses, we don't necessarily know what the software is being used for and in what context. However, I will say that, you know, this kind of campaign that they've done is becoming more popular. You know, they're not the only ones doing it, but what our software does is it allows agencies that have a, you know, relatively important campaign that involves personalization.
Right.
Our software immediately empowers them to realize their vision. And, you know, I think that's what separates us from the landscape offerings in this realm of personalized video. A lot of it is about, you know, hosted video rendering services, mm-hmm. whereby, you know, the engagement is much longer to get the creative to this, you know, company or to this hosted environment. With ours, you basically bring it all in-house with your creative teams who already have the skills in After Effects. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you learn, you know, maybe spend a day learning our software and you're already capable of generating thousands of videos in a matter of, you know, hours.
Huh.
So yeah, I think it's safe to say that, you know, they probably researched our product and, you know, determined whether or not it was right for them. But I think more importantly is our product is helping these people at least at the very least, you know, make a breakthrough.
So respecting that you have to be careful about what you say and not piss somebody off, because, you know, whatever permissions are in place or not in place. If I came to you and said, as a end user client, what Adidas did with the Boston Marathon, where they cranked out 30,000 videos or whatever the number was in 24 hours, is that something your software could do? And you would answer?
Yes, 100%
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I definitely want to send that message out to folks.
Yeah, yes. So we'll do it that way.
Okay.
Perfect. Keep everybody safe.
Yes.
So how is this being used by clients? Like, they don't come to you. Like, I wouldn't come directly to you. I would go more than likely through an agency, correct?
Yeah. I mean, right now, a largest market share for this kind of thing for our product is from the agencies, next to digital signage, mm-hmm. being, you know, a very close contender to that world of agency. But yeah, they would go to an agency and say, you know, I need this personalization campaign, kind of like what I saw in the Boston Marathon with the Adidas sponsorship. And, you know, those agencies have developed know-how at this point for, you know, how to go about doing this. And I think that's one of the large contributions that we brought to the environment, to the production environment in particular, is, you know, this technique for merging data with video and merging data with time-based, you know, content. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, at this point, you know, we're 4 years old, the software has been adopted enough and so far that, you know, the techniques are becoming standardized. They're actually being spread. We see more action going on in our user-to-user forums these days. And, you know, I think our hope at some point is for the methodology to become, you know, at least a de facto standard. But, you know, that obviously will take a little bit more time to see how it plays out.
Mm-hmm. On a practical level, whether I'm a digital signage solutions provider or an agency, I'm listening to this podcast and thinking, oh, this is interesting. What is involved? They're buying a software license from you and they're installing it on, I presume, something a little more powerful than a Raspberry Pi?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, they purchase a license to use our software, and then that software is installed on a machine that they can control. Mm-hmm. And that's a big win for them because they have complete control over their data and they can manage the security of their data. So once they install the software, you know, they have to have obviously a data set or a data store that contains all the data they want to use for each iteration of the video template.
Yeah.
And, you know, the methodology for collecting that data is different for every client. Some clients will have a front-end mobile app. Some clients will have just a simple web form. Other clients may want like a chat bot that populates this data store with what we call a render job. And, you know, each machine that has our software installed essentially looks at that data store and notices when things happen, when new data arrives. Our software can kick off a brand new render based off of a template automatically without any human intervention with the data merged in. So, you know, it's this process, or it's there are some requirements from the client insofar as they have to, you know, they should know After Effects. They, you know, it's useful if they have development resources on staff. But what we're finding now is that because the software is very easy to use, once there's a certain threshold met, when the client realizes how powerful the technology is, they end up asking us to, you know, consult on a larger projects or consult on, you know, integrating data stores that may be antiquated with something that our software can read. So, you know, we don't want clients to shy away just because they don't have like a specific skill set on staff or resource. So we do our best to come in and help them, you know, achieve success in their campaigns.
Is there a direct handshake API call or anything else to the Adobe Creative Suite, or are they kind of two solitudes that output from one goes into the other?
Well, there's nothing that our software doesn't explicitly hit up any Creative Cloud API.
Uh-huh.
It's developed as a plugin. So there are components to our software that are written in C++ that are obviously linked to the Adobe After Effects SDK.
Okay.
And so there is some communication between our software and the internals of After Effects. But as far as, you know, reaching out over the network, the only place we really do that is if a user has decided that they want Google spreadsheet to act as a data source. Mm-hmm. So when you have something like that, obviously Templator has to read the network. Alternatively, another place where the network is utilized is if the data store is a remote URL. So some people can, you know, they can host their custom servers spitting out data in a format that our software can read. And so you can point our software to a URL, and that can be your data, you know, your data feed for your templates.
Right. Now, how does this compare to what you could do in terms of dynamic templating with an HTML5 template? What would be the argument of video versus going the other way?
So, you know, that's a great question. I think video for me, you know, I come from a video background, and I think of it as more of a platform agnostic medium, meaning, you know, there are standards that have been set in video, in the world of video, long before, you know, the interweb came alive, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so as a result, the devices that are capable of playing video, you know, there's not much in the way of getting video displayed on different devices. So, you know, with HTML5, you have to make sure that the runtime environment is proper and can take all the magic that HTML5 can offer developers, you know, and that it can display that kind, you know, the latest and greatest HTML5 stuff. But, you know, a lot of our clients are, they don't want to be worried about how a certain, you know, animation or an ad might display on different devices. Mm-hmm. And so video is a big win there because, you know, it's just baked pixels. It's a raster grid that's being played back and it doesn't matter where it's, you know, displaying.
Right.
So that's one advantage. I'd say another advantage is just the quality of the craft of the output. You know, there's a lot of research and development that Adobe has invested in After Effects. And what happens is when you create content from After Effects, it looks modern because it is modern. You know, it's these artists who are capable of pushing and pulling After Effects to create some real interesting visual magic. And those techniques have been in development for the last 25 years. I mean, AE is now a 25-year-old application, and Adobe is doing very well in the market share with their motion graphics tool. And so, you know, with HTML5, you don't get the nice fancy stuff that you can with AE. Mm-hmm. And I think in terms of the consumer end, when people view highly crafted, beautiful artistic content, but with a, you know, splash of personalization, I think it can really set, you know, that content aside from everything else that's going on in their, you know, when they're scrolling through their social feeds or what have you.
Right.
So there's a certain shock factor in seeing your name, you know, used with the latest AE plugin, let's say. And I think that's what our clients appreciate over using, you know, a very flat, I'd say, you know, yeah, it's flat animations in HTML5.
Mm-hmm. It's just not the same.
It's just not the same. It's a different, you know, tool. It's like comparing the difference between a, I don't know, like a glue gun and a, you know, oil paintbrush. It's just a different tool that does different things.
Right. Okay.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit screenfeed.com to explore the 75 plus content options we've created to do just that, and then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
I don't want to get into who too much because it sounds like you can't talk too much about who, but what are ways that you can talk about that DataClay is being used? What kinds of projects have you seen, you know, with a particular view to the signage market?
Sure. So I think, you know, particular to the signage market, we have a client who operates a sign in Times Square that is on top of the PlayStation Theater. And basically, you know, it's just helping them in terms of labor. It's helping them reduce the amount of time it takes just to swap out elements from a few templates they have that are displayed on the sign. We also have clients in the hospitality industry that are using it for signage throughout their facilities for things like schedules and, you know, that they'll place throughout a lobby or, you know, some other, you know, room. But, you know, since video is so ubiquitous, since video is everywhere, you know, it's hard to pinpoint one specific example that, or one specific, I guess, sector of the market that is doing the most. Mm-hmm. Because it seems like we're getting clients from all different kinds of verticals who are using video as, you know, a way to communicate. And so I can't really say that, like, you know, oh, in advertising, people are doing it more than in digital signage, and people in e-commerce are using it, at, you know, not as much as people in digital signage, stuff like that. Like, I can't, there's no way to do that at this
right.
point, just because it's, you know, we're seeing an even balance all across the board. Mm-hmm. But I'd say, you know, some of the things you can do are, you know, localization. That's a real big deal for the digital signage folks. They can, you know, localize content very quickly with our software, creative that they might develop and then want to push through digital signage networks. With our software, you don't have to worry about, you know, making 10 or 20 iterations, you know, manually. You do it automatically, but you do it, you know, the output's obviously, you know, high end. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, it's otherwise, you know, I think in terms of live events and digital out of home, you know, one of our licensees is South by Southwest, who's also an Austin company, and they use it for all of their lower thirds graphical overlays for, you know, their cameras, doing the interviews and the keynotes. Mm. So, you know, something that took them, whatever, 2 weeks, all of a sudden became a day and a half. And so that's significant savings on their part. But it's, I think in terms of the live event stuff, it's really fantastic. We've seen people, you know, operators of the digital signage, you know, hardware using the software to composite in like tweets that have a hashtag on top of photos that might be associated with those, you know, those tweets, or, and so they can display that in real time on at the event using our software.
Yeah. You would think in big sports venues or particularly theme parks, mm-hmm. you think of the theme parks that are always trying to sell you photos of you coming down the water, the log flume ride or whatever, and getting soaked. You mm-hmm. can imagine how video pieces that, you know, capture you entering the park and they use pattern detection to bracket your face or some other identifier. And then, you know, you're leaving the park and you can go there and you can pick up a disc or a key fob or whatever that's got, you know, the video file there that you can fire off to wherever.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they already do the print one. They might as well have like your emotions in real time there.
Yeah, it's probably cheaper too.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Because they probably print 100 and sell 5.
Right.
You know, that sort of thing.
Right, right. So I think, yeah, I mean, any place where you have a need to communicate at the personal level in out of home is you know, our software can definitely help out. Mm-hmm.
Are there any limitations in terms of resolution or file size or file type? Like you, I assume you do H.264, pretty standard video. Can you only do 720p? Can you, if somebody said, hey, I want to batch produce 1,000 4K files, would you say, well, no, or yes, but that's going to take a long time?
I would say yes, but that will take a long time. And there are no limitations. The only limitations are that the ones that AE After Effects will impose on the artist. So, you know, the screen ratio and, you know, that kind of thing, the output resolution, that is all controlled by AE and by the creator of the content or the template. And our software just basically turns After Effects into like a superhuman Jarvis kind of character where, you know, it's just taking what AE is and making it into a true bot, really. And so, you know, any kind of footage element that you can import into AE, our software can import. Any kind of output AE can do, our software can support. But, you know, we offer hooks into our algorithm, into the main batch iterative algorithm, meaning that developers who are licensees can create their own code that does specific things on the machine that it's running on to, you know, execute at certain points in the algorithm. So let's say after every video that gets rendered, you want to transcode it. So you can do that by using something like FFmpeg, right? Like mm-hmm. a command line tool that you can invoke on the computer every time Templator, our product, finishes rendering out a job. So, you know, it doesn't, the idea of, you know, the codecs being limited or some other kind of limitation that After Effects might present can be worked around by, you know, writing your own code and making and basically extending the functionality of our software. Mm-hmm.
If I'm an agency or, again, a solutions provider, and I think this is very cool, what am I looking at in terms of cost and that you can sure. talk about, and you know, and capital investment as well, in terms of, do I need like a $10,000 super-powered Mac workstation, or you know, what do I need?
Right. So a lot of the cost depends on how much time it takes After Effects to actually render out the composite. Mm-hmm. So every time our software reversions an After Effects template, it also renders it. And so, you know, the more effects you have, the more complexity in your animation, the longer it's going to take for each render to occur.
Yeah.
So I'd say, you know, the way we price it is we look at one render, how long one render will take in a template. We do our best to optimize that composition so that the render can happen as fast as possible. And then we benchmark the render time against the cost for, you know, having a 1 hour compute time on a fairly good Amazon web server, you know, EC2 server. Mm-hmm. And then we can extrapolate, well, you know, if you have 1,000 videos and they take 1,000 or 1 minute each, well, that's 1,000 minutes. And so you start doing the math, and all of a sudden you can come up with costs that are, you know, related to just the server costs for, you know, for a particular batch, let's say. And then, you know, beyond that, there's costs that are involved in the storage. So, you know, right now when you look at S3 on Amazon, it looks very cheap, right? But when you start talking about the output of your what our software does, like you're looking at, you know, you start have to think about, well, how big is it? How much space am I going to need for this campaign? Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden storage is actually like, it may not be significant, but it's a real cost that you have to consider. Mm-hmm. Especially as you get into the terabytes of output. But I think, you know, there's the storage, there's the compute time, and then there's the video streaming, which actually you would think is cheap, but it's actually really, it gets costly, especially if you want to use a service, a streaming service that has analytics, mm-hmm. and that already has like a video player that you can just easily embed. So, you know, I would say those are the three main, well, there's four main costs. The first is the creative, you know, the actual talent you have to pay to make the master template. Then there's the compute time, which can get costly. And you can split, depending on the amount of time that you need to turn around a set of videos, you can split the job across multiple machines. So it can get pretty costly depending on the time window that you're looking at. And then, you know, there's the storage costs and then the distribution costs. And, you know, those are all costs that have to be assessed depending on each campaign. There are some clients that they don't really have a need to do a full batch, you know, set of jobs, like 10,000 at one time. They want it more of a system, like an on-demand system, where they say, you know, we need this server to be able to render out any request that comes its way for 6 months. So, you know, you look at the costs of that. And, you know, you can immediately know what 6 months of this server being on is going to cost. So there's it really is a, when we do these project specific jobs for clients, it's really dependent on you know, what factors they have.
So it's you're not just buying a license from you guys and buying equipment that adheres to a certain specification minimum. It tends to be project by project that you work with your customers.
Yeah. When we engage directly with customers, it's project by project, at least at this point.
Right. And I think we talked about this right now. It works the way you've described, but I think you were talking about eventually you're going to move to some sort of a cloud-based, almost SaaS service or add that on.
Yeah, we are working towards, you know, figuring out the best, you know, design and implementation for a system that directly from our software within AE, if you need to create, you know, multiple thousands of videos or 100,000 or millions of videos, we want a method by which the After Effects user can effectively specify, you know, how many machines they want to run the batch on, you know, what they're expected turnaround time needs to be, and you know, all this stuff that you can specify within AE and then click a button and all the assets are then offloaded onto a machine that, you know, performs those tasks.
Right. You better hope you have it right the first time.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, there's things like spot checking that we do for clients where we'll, you know, they don't want to see the whole video. They just want to see like a few or a couple of dynamic frames.
Right.
And so we'll, you know, run through a basically output still images of, you know, whatever frame they want to see, and then deliver that as a package, and they can see how the data looks before we actually run the whole, you know, the whole shebang.
Right. Where did the company come from? How did you get started in this?
Sure. I had worked a great deal of my career in post-production and in motion graphics mm-hmm. and visual effects. You know, I worked at a stint at Digital Kitchen in Chicago. I had my own studio here in Austin in 2007 through 2009. And, you know, I had always been tasked with jobs coming from clients where, you know, maybe they needed 10 iterations of this one composition. And I think, you know, I don't think that clients really understand that that can actually take a lot of time. And it's not just time. It's not just the time. It's also, there's a certain morale that can be diminished coming from a creative person to do that kind of work. And so I figured, you know, I had a job that required this, and I was going to do the best that I could to automate this stuff. And so, you know, I have a CS background, and I basically built this product, and I shared it with a few people, and then they immediately saw the power and the approach that we were taking and how easy it was to integrate into their current workflows. And eventually, you know, we became an LLC, and we found a distributor that was very good to us. And we found that, you know, the people were actually like buying it, putting money down for this software. And, you know, once we discovered the kinds of clients we were getting and the kinds of conversations we were having, we realized that, you know, as far as wrapping around a recurring revenue model, it made the most sense for us, because they wanted to see our licensees, I should say, wanted to see more come out of us. But that wasn't going to happen if we weren't somehow, you know, compensated. And so with software, we felt like the recurring model and the ability for customers to say, you know what, I just need this for a month because I have this one campaign, and then they don't have to pay again until they have another campaign. You know, that was appealing to smaller studios, but then the larger enterprises who were like, you know, we need 15 of these things to like make this thing happen, you know, to make these batch renders really mm-hmm. fly through these batch renders. So, you know, the model fit them as well. And so, you know, once we kind of stabilized that, we are now doing a lot of the consulting and client and service engagements. But it's, I think, you know, in my background, the company came about because of, you know, the problem that I identified as mm-hmm. a post producer. And then also because, you know, I have an experience in developing websites and mobile apps. And so I felt like it was a fun product to make, because it combined all of my kind of history mm-hmm. of, you know, video and CS and, you know, the web and all of this kind of stuff. And I, you know, it's just been a very enjoyable process, and it's certainly, you know, what I am passionate about and what I'm focused on now.
Hmm. Yeah, it's definitely not a solution looking for a problem. I've been blabbering on for years now about how important automation is in digital signage, and that's the only way to really sort of solve this whole feed the content beast thing. Or it's not the only way, but it's the most efficient and logical way to do it. So something like Dataclay to me is fascinating and badly needed. If people want to find out more, where do they go online?
They go to dataclay.com. Yes. Just go to dataclay.com. If they want to download a 30-day trial of our software, which offers all of the features from every edition, they can download it right from our website. They just create a user and get started on a 30-day trial. And, you know, after they see and recognize the power, they can buy right from our site, which we're very proud of. We just launched a store recently, so people can buy direct licenses from us.
Great. All right. Thank you for taking the time to chat with me.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for having me on the podcast, Dave. I appreciate it.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9, that's 16-9.net every day.
If you like this podcast, please also check out the companion 69 podcast called Projects. That's done by Michael Tutton, and there's a new episode every second Friday. 69 the blog and now the podcast are properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.